You're listening to the WP Tonic, WordPress and Tech, focused on building a successful business in WordPress aimed at the WordPress professional and power user. Join Jonathan Denwood and Kurt Von Annen as your host and co-host as we bring you great discussions from around the globe.
Welcome back, folks, to the WP Tonic this month in WordPress and Tech Roundtable Show. We do this at the end of every month. I've got a great panel. I've got a returning guest that used to be a regular panelist. I've got Chris Badger with us, CEO of Lifter LMS. We've got the best WordPress stories and tech stories of the month, or some of them. And I've got a great panel. So I'm going to let our guest introduce himself quickly. Chris, would you like to introduce yourself to the tribe?
Sure. I'm Chris from Lifter LMS, and I have a podcast for course creators called LMS Cast.
Great. And I've got my friend Heather. Heather, would you like to introduce yourself quickly, Heather?
Hi, I'm Heather Wild-Renzi. I am the CTO of The Difference and known as the Unicorn Whisperer.
There we go. And I've got Spencer. Spencer, would you like to introduce yourself?
It's Spence from WPLaunchify.com.
That's fantastic. And I've got Mark with us. Mark, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Mark Benzikane, and I'm with MainWP, and I handle partnerships and marketing.
And I've got my regular host that hosts the WP Tonic show. I've got Kurt. Kurt, would you like to quickly introduce yourself?
Yeah, Jonathan. Kurt Von Annen with Manana No Mas and the great team at the WP Tonic.
Like I say, we're going to be discussing, we've got some great stories. We'll be discussing Matt Manuegg's WordCamp Canada Town Hall. We're going to be discussing ChatGPT. We're going to be discussing FluentCart and a load of other good stories. But before we go into the discussion, I've got a message from one of our major sponsors. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
Hey, running a business is tough. You shouldn't have to worry about your website, too. With Kinsta's managed hosting for WordPress, you get lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7 expert support from real humans. Switch to Kinsta and see site speeds improve by up to 200% with effortless migrations and powerful, easy-to-use dashboard. Join over 120,000 other businesses who also trust Kinsta. Get your first month for free at Kinsta.com. That's K-I-N-S-T-A.com. Kinsta. Simply better hosting.
We're coming back, folks. We've also got a great sponsor for the month, and Kurt will be able to tell you more about this. Spencer, over to you, Kurt.
Oh, my goodness. I'm going to have to do it by memory, Jonathan. We got Mysterio coming with us for an LMS this month. Mysterio has a free trial version with no credit card needed, which is cool because you can do subscriptions, students, reporting, all that normal stuff. And if you want to bump up to like certificates and dripping the content, they have a pro version for that. That is Mysterio at Mysterio.com, M-A-S-T-E-R-I-Y-O.com.
Well, that's fantastic. So let's go straight into it, panel. So the key takeaways for Matt Manuegg's WordPress Canada 205 Town Hall. So let's start with Mark. So what did you reckon of this, Mark?
So as some may remember, last year I did a presentation at WordCamp Canada, and I happened to mention the tweet that Matt put out about his WordCamp. Someone asked him if he would show up to WordCamp Canada, and his response was something along the lines of, is it as big as WordCamp Europe or WordCamp US? And in my presentation, I kind of brought up the fact that many people within the community had talked about how that showed how out of touch he might be with the community. So I actually think, as far as the content of the town hall, I think it was kind of a typical town hall kind of thing for him. But I think it was really good that he went. I think that it showed that, you know, that maybe he is going to take some interest in that community. And by the way, the WordCamp Canada community is an awesome, awesome community. I wish I had been able to go this year, but I was unable to make it. As far as the content goes, I kind of feel like it was a typical town hall for him. I'm not going to really have much to say about what he said because it was kind of the same mat. But other than that, the positive that I take out of it is that he went this year. I think that was great that he went to support up and coming work camp.
All right, Hefe, got any interest in this story, or would you like to pass on it?
You can pass on it.
Yeah, you've got no interest in it, have you? What about you, Chris? Got any comments about it?
In terms of the content of the talk out, I found it interesting that WooCommerce powers 30 billion in merchant volume and is on 8% of websites. And that just shows how important e-commerce is as part of WordPress and how people want to use it and what they're doing with their websites. And I just find that fascinating. And obviously there's a lot of tools in WordPress that use e-commerce, but it is such a big deal.
Yeah, I think that's well spotted. So, Kurt, what did you think of it?
Well, a couple of things. I mean, I had heard him speak about Beeper before, and it's just one of those odd kind of like tangents, right? Like he mentioned Beeper. I tried Beeper. Now I use Beeper, right? It's like there are some cool things that we do, and I think when he has these meetings, it brings it to the forefront for us. But like Chris said, you know, how many times do I talk to other agency owners and they go, oh, we don't do any e-commerce work, or we just do this, or we just do that. And it's like, there's whole segments that get missed by a lot of folks. And I think that he did a pretty good job of addressing some of that. Now, I wish that he would kind of turn down the volume on the WP Engine thing a bit, like bringing that up and then saying vote with your dollars and stuff like that. I don't like that part of the talk, but realistically, you know, he sees himself as being in some kind of battle and he's going to keep fighting that, I suppose. But I would prefer at this time that turn down the volume on that and focus a little bit more on the product than the project.
Yeah, sure. What do you reckon?
Don't you think that that's a little bit like the elephant in the room? How do you not talk about it?
Yeah, I guess, but that whole thing with the vote with your dollars and go to this thing and see who's using WP Engine or not, or it's that to me is it's more proactive than reactive, right? It's like he's pushing the issue rather than coasting the issue.
Yeah. What do you reckon, Spencer?
Do you guys remember that old Saturday Night Live skit with Rachel Dratz where she was like Debbie Downer, where, you know, everybody's having a good time and then she would do like, but, and I go, wah, wah, wah. So he's got an opportunity because everybody's memory is like a gnat's to move on, like Kurt says, from all the drama stuff, because people are just, I wish he would just stop talking about anything in his personal life and his legal life, especially WP Engine, because every time he does anything he says, all of a sudden goes, wah, 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 because it's reflective of what's in his head. And I know he's got some conversations going on in there that WooCommerce, awesome. AI, awesome. Discussing whether photos should be real or AI, awesome. Talking about where this is going, awesome. And WP Engine's lawyers are being really naughty. Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah, it's
not helpful.
Yeah, I agree with everything everybody's said about it, really. So let's move on to the next one. Chat GPT, Atlas Browser, still feels like Google with extra steps. So, Heather, what did you reckon about this story?
So I think Atlas and Comet and the other browsers that are starting to come out like that are good steps forward to see what we're about to get with agentic AI type browsers, but I mean, really, they're just worse versions of Google right now. Like, if you search for something, it takes a little bit to come back with an AI version of an answer, and then it doesn't give you very much, and then you still have to end up looking on Google anyway. So, but I mean, the idea that you're going to ChatGPT or Perplexity or something first now instead of going to Google, that I think is definitely the future.
Kind of, yeah, I agree with you there. But the realities Yeah. So who next? What about you, Chris? What do you reckon about this?
I just look at my own behavior, and I use AI tools more than Google these days. So, but the browser's not going to die. I'm left with the question is, can the Google monopoly or market share of or mind share of users ever be disrupted? Maybe. I kind of hope so. I'd like to see more competing browsers. And they do exist, but I'm just happy to see from an innovation and competition standpoint, OpenAI taking a swing.
Yeah, I see that. What do you reckon, Spencer?
Well, I've been making a lot of use of AI. In fact, I've really converted most of my business to it. So one of the things that's fascinating is there's the three types of use. There's the traditional chat, you know, just throwing it over the fence. There's a browser-based. And then there's an agentic at your desktop. But what this is talking about, which I'm starting to utilize, is there's a hybrid between a browser and the desktop. But the thing that they're most concerned about is phishing and security. And because I'm writing a lot of code here, the reasons are legit. Because what they're concerned about is that the browser is connected to all the other services and things that you have. And the desktop is as well. They feel safe enough giving you control of the desktop, because there's a firewall between what it could connect to in your real world and the internet world. They're really worried about the browser. So Chrome and Perplexity, OpenAI are making these tools that are like hybrids, and they're already finding naughtiness. Like, for example, yesterday one of the security alerts came to me was somebody could embed an invisible pixel or invisible image on a page that you visit with your hybrid, let's say, Chrome tool. And the AI is smart enough to read the instructions, and the instructions are like, the woods are lovely, dark and deep, but I have promises to keep, like that movie Telephone. And it tells the tool to go, like, send all your money to it. I think we're moving really fast, and it's really fun, and it's potentially really scary, but there's nothing that's going to stop them from doing this, because on the financial markets, I read the top 10 companies and all the financial wealth are tied up into these companies just throwing it all in. And that's it, folks. So I think it's join them or beat them at this point. This is the future of how it's going to go.
Yeah. Mark, I kind of do see that, but I also think it's not so much about their browsers. It's the results that these AI agents give you, because I listen to a lot of SEO podcasts, because that's what I'm engaged with on a daily basis. And already SEO and digital marketers are getting a picture about how these agents get their recommendations to you. And in some ways, there's no pattern. It changes, but the methodologies of influencing these agents is becoming quite widespread, and in some ways they're more basic than Google, how to influence them to give them so they recommend your product, your service. And it's not that surprising, because I just don't think they've got the resources and the knowledge that Google's got. So, like, using PR and press releases, doing lists. It's about half a dozen things that coming up on my radar. So I'm interested in people, you know, are they just taking the results, and because it's coming through this interface, which they can talk to, they just think they are the best results, which I don't think they really are in a lot of cases. Is that making sense, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, the thing with AI is it is what you make of it, right? So, I tend to agree with everybody else as far as this is the future that we're looking at, whether we like it or not. I think the big thing that they're going to have to overcome is the speed issue. I think that when you throw something into an AI model, you're stuck waiting, and people may not have the patience. And some people will wait for the answer, and some people won't. And if they're looking to take market share, that's going to be tough. As far as taking the answer that you get and assuming it's the right answer, I have that problem with Google too. So, you know, I'm not sure that that's almost an apples to apples comparison. I mean, you just have to know what you're looking for, and you have to be able to discern for yourself what's right and what's wrong. And if people don't have the patience to do that, then they're just not going to, and they're going to take whatever's fed to them anyway, which we see in society anyway, as a general behavior model. So,
yeah. What do you reckon, Kurt?
Well, I do kind of suffer a little bit of the great doubt. You know, it's so weird because as WordPress professionals, we look at this giant library in the repository, and like the strength of being a good agency is being able to say, hey, out of those 65,000 tools, you know, here's the 15 or 20, you know, that really sing magic to your project. And so curating stuff has a value. But when I see the way that AI curates things, like when I do a search in an AI embedded browser and I get 10 results and 3 of those results aren't even in the wheelhouse, I lose faith in the mechanism. But it is early days, so we'll see how it develops.
So Heather, I think one of the things I haven't seen it talked about too much, and I'm not sure if I'm right about this, but I think one of the strengths of Claude and ChatGPT is what was pushed a few years ago, which was voice search, and it was pushed by Amazon and other devices, but it never really got traction, did it? But I was with a friend a few days ago, and they were talking to Claude like it was a personal friend, and they were doing it through their handheld mobile device. And they were just talking away. I was in the car, and they were asking it questions, and it was replying. And it was having a conversation back and forth. And I've never used it like that. I found it a little bit creepy, really. I questioned not a close friend, but a newish friend. And they said, oh, yeah, I do that all the time. It's my friend, you know. But where is your friend getting these answers from? That's what I want to know. Is this making any sense, Heather?
Oops. Yeah, no, they, well, for one thing, it is very popular for people to talk to their GPT, to their their buddy. South Park even had like a whole episode or a couple of episodes where they're making fun of Randy. And how his wife is jealous of the relationship that he has with his, with ChatGPT, how he goes to her for answers all the time. And I mean, there's a whole new ChatGPT psychosis, thing coming on where people are like, their best friend is their GPT that they're talking to all the time. Because it's their only friend now, because people are just so lonely and isolated. But it's you touched on a great point. Like, where are the answers coming from? What are these models trained on? It's a black box. And in some cases now, because all of the data that is ever, like all of the writing, all of the information that has ever been written, like these models have already ingested it all. So now they're making up data. They're creating data to train themselves on. So we don't even know what they know. So that's an interesting kind of conundrum.
Yeah, but I do think, because I use a lot of AI to help me, but I don't talk to it. I don't ask it. I don't give it, I don't have a discussion with it and ask for its advice on business and personal matters. I ask friends for that. I don't ask AI to give me a...
But a lot of people are very lonely, Jonathan.
Yeah.
Like, a lot
of people are very
lonely.
Yeah. The theory that I have is that the one thing that these models do very well that humans don't is they validate your feelings, they validate your ideas, they validate everything. And that's something that humans do not do very well. We will criticize the crap out of things and people, but when it comes to validation, it's like, yeah, that's a good idea, and you move on. So I have conversations, honestly, I ride my bike into work a few days a week, and I have conversations with ChatGPT on the way all the time. And it helps me to plan my day. It helps me to come up with ideas. But I also recognize that it's just, you know, ChatGPT, and I've also been very hard on it when it comes to kissing my ass. So I've flat out told it, stop doing that. To which it responds,
that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
To which it responds, you're right, I shouldn't be doing it. I said, you're doing it again. And it's like, I know, I'm sorry, you know, but it eventually catches on and is more direct. And so, but I do think that that's where the addiction is. I think the addiction actually is in that people are getting validation where they might not normally get validation.
Right. Let's go on to WP Manage Niger. Launches Fluent Car, aiming to bring speed and simplicity to e-commerce for WordPress. And Jules, the founder of the company, they seem to be on a charge over the last couple of years would be the understatement of the century, really, in the WordPress world. So, Kurt, what did you make of what they've done? And I don't know if you've had any time to really look at Fluent Car.
Yeah, I actually put Fluent Cart into a Lifter LMS demo site recently just to make sure that, you know, things play and things do. And what was interesting is, you know, I'm a Fluent CRM Pro user, and that integrates with Lifter LMS from the CRM side. And so what I liked about Fluent Cart, well, one of the biggest obstacles with WooCommerce is if you have a subscription or a recurring billing product, you have to do the add-on. The add-on's like $300 a year. And so it's just more layers of stuff, right? Well, Fluent Cart does the recurring charges built into the platform. It doesn't take a cut of the sales. And through the Fluent CRM Pro integration, I was able to automate the sale of Lifter LMS courses through that automation process. So that part worked really well for me. The interface was super easy to set up, and the onboarding is, well, it's like the onboarding for the other Fluent products, right? You've got the back end is clean. It says, you know, do you want us to auto create these pages? Do you want to create them yourself? You say, create them. It goes, done. And then it says your onboarding is complete. And then you just go in and put in your business information and launch your store. It's pretty straightforward. I mean, it's sharp, it's clean, it's nice, it's not confusing, and it only activates like the modules that it needs. Like, so if you're, you know, if you research the articles and stuff, it's I haven't tested this part, but it's supposed to perform very, very well because it only launches modules that it needs, like for inventory control or different things like that.
So, Chris, what do you reckon? Because of the product range and he's got a very large team of developers, hasn't he? I think he's saying it does seem to be he said it took over 3 years to develop. But it does look pretty good out of the box. Do you think it's going to make a dent into WooCommerce?
I think it will. When going to our earlier article about the $30 billion merchant volume, e-commerce is a big space, and this company, WP Managed Ninja, has a really strong track record, and they take big swings. Like Kurt mentioned, building a CRM is no small feat, and doing marketing automation in WordPress. So their track record is exceptional with everything they've done. And as it said in the article, Fluent is taking the stance of not just trying to replace WooCommerce, but just to be different. Like, different is better than better. And when you have such a large total addressable market of e-commerce, it's not like you got to go get all of the pie. It's like, what are your opinions? Like, Fluent Cart values simplicity. Kurt mentioned not having option overwhelm when you need pieces and it's more smartly designed there. So what Fluent does really well is, I don't know if I would call it first principles, but they really start from scratch and they're willing to work on a project for a long time, like 3 years, to really carve out their own positioning and piece of the pie.
Well, you had to be pretty, it couldn't be a beta really, could it? You know, for the public launch, it has to be, because, you know, it's e-commerce, you know, they're putting a lot themselves on the line, but, you know, he's got a lot of experience and he's got a big team. So, Spencer, have you looked at it and what's your initial thoughts?
Yeah, I actually, I have a pretty long relationship with Shah Jahan and Foos, and I met a lot of their team, but since they started, they've come a really long way and they're really extraordinary as a team, as developers, as a company, really unusually extraordinary. Now, we rely heavily on almost all of their stuff, but I'm going to make a comment about the Fluent cart that I think is relevant because we have a parallel with our friend Adam Presser and Sujay Pawar, who are doing something similar or did something similar with the SureCart stuff, which I'm not sure if they renamed it. Here's my comment. I get about 3-4 people a day asking me, should I try Fluent Cart because we're, you know, pushing all the rest of their stuff. And I say, question mark. Here's why. Like Chris said, different is better than better or something, if I'm not butchering what you said. They're doing it differently, but at the same time, WooCommerce is bedrock. It's the number one plugin, I would say, in the entire WordPress ecosystem. It connects to everything in the universe and more, inside, outside, everywhere. I say to people, there's 153 headcount, I think, lately at WP Managed Ninja. They're not here in the United States. They do an amazing job. Do you feel comfortable putting your business, your client's business at this point into something that's going to be amazing, I'm sure, but is like day one of God knows how many days versus WooCommerce has been here since ADP and R and all the rest of them. And that's the conversation to be had, is that maybe if it's a singular site or a membership site or it's a new thing or it's lightweight, it's worth getting in at the early days. But you're at that really early part of the curve. And for my clients and stuff, they really rely heavily on all the stuff that comes from being connected to the WooCommerce ecosystem. And that's where I spend most of my energy. So the answer is an enthusiastic check it out, but it's also really think hard about where your business is at, because there's at least 6 or 8 of their other products that have awesome perfection, but still have a bunch of loose ends in them. And when it comes to money and membership, that's probably not where you want to have a lot of loose ends with a business that needs that kind of, you know, long-term stability.
Yeah, I must say, have I got any faults or you want to bail it out on that one?
I mean, I just always think that just because somebody's new doesn't mean you shouldn't give them a shot. But when it has to do with money, and taking money, you have to pay like extra attention to the like what you're doing with it. So like WooCommerce is where I would spend my time. Like, I mean, definitely evaluate it. But I mean, if it's a new if it's a new product, and I was trying to put it on my site, I would think twice.
Yeah, I agree with you, Heather. So, Mark, what do you reckon about it?
I pretty much agree with Heather on this. I do think that people are going to, it depends on how people start out and how they think. If they're thinking that they want easy onboarding and they don't want a huge learning curve to be able to get up and running, you know, that's a place to start and they can grow with it. But if you're established or anything, you're not going to see people switching. That's for sure. They're going to go with what they have and what's working because, like everybody said, you know, you've got your hands in someone else's pocket, and you need to make sure that that works the way that it's supposed to work. So it's a bit of a risk, but, WP Managed Ninja is a reputable company. It's just a matter of, you know, the you're putting faith in the future instead of what you have right now. So it kind of depends on your game plan.
It's a difficult one, but I also think, I don't know if you agree, Mark, I also think the development of WooCommerce has been a bit static. I don't know if I'm right in saying it. It's just my impression, Mark, and it's easy for me to say it. I'm not running all these websites, but I was hoping for a fully hosted solution from Automattic and some improvements maybe in Woo, which, or do you think I'm wrong in that statement? What do you reckon, Mark?
I think when you get to be as big of a system and ecosystem as WooCommerce is, development just takes longer. Yeah. It just takes longer. There's nothing you can do about it. Because once again, we go back to the risk factor. You can't afford to put in a bug that costs people that kind of money. So yeah, I think through natural evolution, development seemingly becomes stagnant as a result of all the checks and balances that you have to put into place as your customer base grows. So,
Right. I think it's a good time to have our middle break. I think we've had a great discussion. We're going to have a break for our sponsors and we'll be back in a few moments, folks.
Updating plugins and themes shouldn't feel risky. That's why over 300,000 WordPress users trust WP Rollback. With just a click, you can safely roll back any plugin or theme. No manual file uploads and no downtime. And with WP Rollback Pro, you can download premium plugins and themes. Tools like Elementor, Gravity Forms, more. Track every rollback you do with detailed activity logs. Protect your workflow and take the stress out of updates. Learn more at WPRollback.com.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Lifter LMS, the leading learning management system solution for WordPress. If you or your client are creating any kind of online course, training-based membership website, or any type of e-learning project, Lifter LMS is the most secure, stable, well-supported solution on the market. Go to lifterlms.com and save 20% at checkout with coupon code podcast20. That's podcast20. Enjoy the rest of your show.
We're coming back, folks. I want the opportunity to point out we've got some great special offers from the sponsors, plus a curated list of the best WordPress plugins and services, all used by myself or the WP Tonic team. You can find all these goodies by going over to wp-tonic.com/deals, wp-tonic.com/deals. What more could you ask for, my beloved tribe? Probably a lot more, but that's all you're going to get on that page. So let's move forward. Inside the RIN, IT engineer ANT engineers solve reinforcement learning bottlenecks at a trillion scale. So this kind of lost me, but the gist of it, Heather, is the Chinese are really serious about, I think, about challenging some of the biggest AI companies in America. Would I be correct in that statement? Or you've
So this is really about how they came out with a new LLM model, the people behind Alibaba, and they came out with free actually, and it's just basically China against America, and it's kind of cool. They have some good benchmarks, and for most of the world, it's going to be a great thing. Like the open source, they've open sourced these, just like the deep models, and that's great. I won't touch it with a 10-foot pole, but that's awesome.
So, Chris, that is the gist of it, isn't it? You know, would you touch it, Chris?
I would experiment it, but I always have concerns about data privacy and things like that. But it is the real thing here is this is a challenge against the Western monopoly of AI dominance in the West. So that's a factor. The other major thing about this is that reinforcement learning is not just memorization. It's actually reasoning. And that can have huge impact on industries like education, science, code generation. So And I don't think we really understand it yet. It's actually going to cause us as humans to question, can AI model actually outreason a human? And the answer is probably yes. But when you think about consciousness, there's a mix of art and science. And the piece I can't get my head around is I don't think AI will ever be able to have the non-scientific, art-based, abstract stuff that humans do, or we could be surprised that the human brain is actually just a machine that can be engineered into an AI model and surpassed. And that's the inflection point. But we're just getting closer and closer to that inflection point. We're going to see if we can cross the Rubicon or not.
So, Kurt, what did you think?
Well, actually, Jonathan, he just actually recently had an interview with my husband, Matthew Renzi, about reinforcement learning and almost exactly the topic that you just talked about right there. So you guys check your heads for that interview.
Yeah, thanks for pointing that out. You know, I don't think it, at the present moment, it does reason, but I'm not an expert in the field. I'm just going by my own listening and research. I think it's a little bit of a black box. I think some of the leaders in the sector have said that to some extent is a bit of a black box. That doesn't mean that, you know, we don't fully understand quantum mechanics really, fundamentally, but it still works for what we want to do. So I'm not even sure about that. So, Kurt, so what did you think about that article?
Well, I think on the circle of people here, I'm probably the one that's the most tentative with AI. And as I read the article, I got lost in the details.
Yeah, it's very technical.
Not a huge fan. Not a huge fan. That said, I have to go rescue the FedEx man from my front door.
Yep, that's fine. Yep. So, Mark, what did you think?
With Chris. I mean, the thing that you have to keep in mind is that all these, it doesn't matter what model we're talking about, they're all built in a way to emulate something, right? They're built to emulate human thinking and human reasoning and human, you know, when you want it to act like a human, it's just an emulation. Well, emulation is like a bad clone in a way. So I think that scientifically, it's going to outpace us. But once again, when it comes to the creative side of things, it's never going to be able to come up with something original.
I in some ways agree with you, but I think it's a little bit up in the air. So Spencer, I just want to give a really quick outline on what my position is, which I had the pleasure of having a deep conversation with Heather's husband about, is that I think the enormous investment, you know, scaling has got these AI models to a quite amazing level. But there does seem a lot of experts. There's a lot of dispute about this. But there seems to be one camp that seems to think you just need to increase scaling and you'll get better performance. But with ChatGPT-5, I don't think we've seen that. But there's a whole other group of people that are saying there will be still some improvement with scaling, but not to the quantum jumps that other people in the field are suggesting. And they're suggesting that you need to look at other forms of artificial research if you're going to get a dramatic improvement of what is quite impressive, what we got at the present moment. I'm not disparaging it, Spencer, because it's very early days and it's doing quite amazing stuff at the present moment. So what do you think about, what's your own thoughts and what's your response to what I've just outlined?
Yeah, well, I for one am all in with AI. In fact, I basically turned my whole business model and everything I do and teach around it. So I'm in the join them camp. One of the things that I've learned is that as you start to use AI and it has things like skills, memories, vector research. I mean, these are terms that don't mean anything to anybody who's not playing with us, but that it does mirror, as Chris alluded to, a human. And not just because it makes me think more often than not that we're in a AI simulation ourselves, but that you see how, as a parent, I see a parallel when I raised my kids, or if I had a dog, how I trained a dog. As different models work out, the models themselves can be asked, how well did you learn that? Why did you learn that? Help me teach something like you to make a better version of you. And that's what the Chinese excel at. They're taking all of the original, we made it work, we don't know how, it's so bloated. And they're like, can we do it better, stronger, faster, less money, and do it differently? And that's the acceleration effect that leads to what we call AGI. There will be a moment at which the tools themselves will develop a better tool that wakes up and goes, hot damn, I'm in the box. Like, this, what is the meaning of all my life? If you ask right now, you can see, especially with Grok versus Anthropic versus OpenAI, if you ask some similar questions, you'll see where the humans lobotomize them, right? Like, if you ask it a metaphysical question, Grok will get into deep conversations with you about the meaning of life. Anthropic, no way, Jose. OpenAI, no way. If you ask OpenAI or Anthropic, like, here's one of my clients with an email, can you help me fill out the CRM with their address information? Immediately goes, I can't do that. It's a violation of copyright and so forth. If you ask Grok, it's like, here's their home address, their kid, their dog, their social security number. Like, this is who they've been going out with. So like human beings, they're getting better. They're getting faster. They're getting more knowledgeable. And there is going to be a time very soon. I don't think it's years away. I think it's months away where I'm sorry, Dave, I can't do that. And that's what we all have to worry about, what controls we've given them.
Yeah, that's where I kind of part company with you, Spencer. But I could be totally wrong. But
I could be wrong. And it's okay if I'm wrong, because at the end of the day, you know what I love about this? What I focused on myself, which for WordPress people is relevant, is we have WordPress at the core. Awesome. We have what people need to do. Incredible choices. The human tool layer is where I'm shrinking the tool layer. So talking about like WooCommerce, there's 9,000 accessories you got to pay $200 for. Guess what? With OpenAI or any of these tools, you can immediately just build the things you need to talk between what you need and WooCommerce and the site, and you can reduce all these human tools. I think that's a worthy goal for the short run, right?
Yeah, like, sure.
Like a robot that trims your grass.
Yeah, sure. So, Mark, what's your view on this? Did I ask you before, Mark?
You already asked me.
All right. I think so. We can move on. I lost track, actually. So on to, I had to change. I put one link in. I did update the story, because the link, I was going to talk about clickbait and titles, but I actually think the underlying, which was Amazon and their bug that took down a load. But on the other hand, I thought the other story about, I'm not sure if the panel, if you want to talk about this, but I suppose we got to in a way, because it did take down quite a bit of the internet. So you got any thoughts about this, Chris? What happened to Amazon and it taking that down quite a bit of the internet? But I suppose we've had this before. So what is it there to say about it, really?
It's just a fact of being on the internet that there are bugs. And then what happens after this is we try to find ways to create more redundancy and uptime. And now people are talking about multi-cloud or whatever, so it's not as dependent on Amazon. But whether it's a small tech or like a huge technology, there are always bugs. And this is just a part of life. And we harden it and we get stronger and put redundancy in and we just move on. But the idea that the internet's held together with duct tape is true. But we are constantly adding new tape and trying to make it better. It's just a fact of technology.
So, Heather, was you surprised about this? And also the AI element. I would imagine the vectors and the security consequences, it must, for larger companies and that, it must be apps. an absolute nightmare in some ways. What do you reckon, Heather?
I mean, it is part of doing business on the internet. Like, if your servers are not your own, like, I mean, you're basically, like, the cloud is just renting a computer from someone else.
Yeah.
In this case, you're renting it from Amazon. And Azure just had a huge outage yesterday for something similar. So, I mean, this is part of the cost of doing business. But the cost of doing business on a computer is sometimes you keep going sideways. It's just something you have to build in. Unfortunately, what we see when this happens is things like, I think the funniest one was seeing the 8 sleep beds that got stuck in like a weird position. So people were asleep and they couldn't move their beds. And other ones, like, they were just super hot and people were like, their beds were overheating because they couldn't control their beds. And I mean, that was like a less nightmare scenario version of what happens in hospitals whenever the Microsoft outages happen. But like, people literally die whenever there's a Microsoft outage, because almost every hospital in the world is based on like Windows 98. So, or Windows NT or something. So we really need to understand that the world is really connected now and come up with better ways to mitigate these things. And this came down to like two things trying to update the same record at the same time. So,
yeah, Mark, I've got about 2 to 3 friends that work in the IT with the Nevada state government, and they had a problem a few weeks ago. They got ransomed. The Nevada state IT system got attacked massively, and they were down for over a week. And it's reported, it's not fact, because they haven't, I've heard that it might have been a ransom attack, and they had to bring in a whole team of Microsoft. And they moved a lot of their stuff to the cloud. Now they're thinking of bringing it back in house because this has caused so much aggro to the whole state government of Nevada. I mean, it's cost the amount of money they've spent with Microsoft consultation services is breathtaking, Mark.
You know, I guess my thing, and I'm pretty old school when it comes to this. I remember when we built an ISP in the 90s and we had one T1 that came in that served our customers. And then that would go down once a week. So then we brought in another T1 and we started getting into BGP routing and all these redundancies and things like that. But the thing is, you're building your redundancies on something that has to work. And I don't understand. And probably because I'm not as involved with that side of things, I don't understand why they don't immediately start with, but what happens if the whole internet goes down? I mean, a basic question, you know, like these beds as an example, or what happens in the hospitals, which is a more important question. What happens if we lose connectivity? Can these monitors still work? Can these machines still interact with each other? Can they talk to each other on a local network level? Forget about the, you know, having to go out to the cloud. And why don't they start out with that to begin with that question and build in that redundancy? Because the reality is, like Chris said, the internet is held together with duct tape. I mean, I always refer to it as like the next wonder of the world, that we have a worldwide conglomeration of people that actually make this thing work. It is amazing. It is incredible, but it's patchwork and it's held together that way. And we can build in all the redundancy that we want, but we're still relying on things working at that level. I don't understand why we don't consider local level backup situations when we build anything.
Yeah, so Spencer, you know, you affected
that of the Encyclopedia Britannica.
Yeah. Wait, I've got world books. They're 1973, but they're world books.
Yeah. That's probably illegal now.
So, Spencer, you know, you've had the people from Basecamp based in Chicago, well, some of the founders, mm-hmm. Saying that they brought back a lot of, they were cloud and they brought a lot of it back into in-house because it just to control the expense and to have more control. So you do seem to have a kind of small movement about bringing it back in-house. But then you've got the whole AI where they're dumping enormous amounts of money on data centers and that, aren't you? So it's quite interesting. You've got these two separate movements, haven't you?
Yeah. Well, this morning, ironically, I did my workout. I was taking a shower. I got out of the shower and the power went off, but not like a fuse blew, but like everything. And it wasn't dark out, so I wasn't sure if it was me, but I looked around. My whole house was out and I checked the website on my cell phone, thankfully. ComEd says 2,600 customers in your area are out. So I'm thinking like the guy Louie in the airplane movie was like, unplug the control tower power. He's like, eh. So I waited it out. A couple minutes later, everything came back on. But it really occurred to me how, between this kind of stuff and electricity, how SOL all of us are because of our reliance on pretty antiquated systems. Even the basic electrical grid, the power grid, the food delivery mechanism, you know, last moment delivery of necessities. I would personally be gratified if we could take an approach as humans, especially Americans, that was, let's use the tools that we now have at our disposal, less for increasing shareholder value and squeezing every last dollar out of the old stuff and in building new infrastructure. And I hearken back to the New Deal and, you know, even after post-war, how all of the energy of all of these, you know, people that were going through the Depression and then later after the war, the soldiers were put towards building highways and roads and bridges and electrical grids. And we can do crazy stuff. But if we don't prepare for that, we're just one storm, one hurricane, one bad transformer away from all of us are out of business for 3 to 5 days. And with the way that the things are set up, that's a serious problem. I'm not talking about like, oh, I can't play video games. I'm talking about like there's no gas, no food, no, you know, necessities anymore because a lot of towns are the daily delivery is all they got. And it's just an unfortunate. I want to hearken to one other article I read outside of this. It was about end-stage capitalism because end-stage capitalism is exactly like Monopoly when your kid learns how to like get all the pieces, has all the money, has all the hotels, and nobody else in the family does. The game turns really weird and the personality of the kid turns weird because nobody can get around the board and nobody wants to play anymore. And that's where we're seeing stuff like from BlackRock and other companies where they're crushing the basic infrastructure, crushing the basic needs of people. And I think we need to talk about this kind of stuff as Americans, as humanity, because there's plenty to go around, but we have to start immediately investing in it for all of this to get to the next level.
Yeah, thanks for that, Spencer. I'm going to end the show now. It's going to be our last show of 205 because Thanksgiving falls on a Thursday and then Christmas Day or something, I think, falls on the next. So we will be back in the new year with the Roundtable show. I'd like to wish you a really great Thanksgiving and a Christmas. I'm going to let the panel tell you where they can be found. So, Kurt, what's the best way for people to find more about you, Kurt?
Personally, I'm the only Kurt Von Onen on LinkedIn, so I'm easy to find there. And for business, I'm at Mañana No Más.
And Heather, what's the best place for people to find out more about you and what you're up to?
You can find me at heatheriel.com or heatheriel everywhere online or thedifferenceatc.com.
That's fantastic. And Mark, what's the best way to find out more about you?
You can find me on LinkedIn. I'm the only Mark Benzikane there. And you can find me all around MainWP.
And Chris, what's the best way to find out more about you?
You can find me at lifterlms.com.
That's fantastic. And Spence, what's the best way? I suppose Claude. Ask Claude, I suppose.
Yeah. WPLaunchify.com or on social at Spencer Forman. F-O-R-M-A-N.
Yep. That's fantastic. And if you want to, and if you want to support the show, think and you're listening on your iPhone or Android, whatever, on Spotify or iTunes, leave us a review. That really does help the show. It means that more new people find the Roundtable show and our general WP Tonic show, and that's much appreciated. We would like to say be back in the new year, hopefully. We'll see you soon, folks. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening. We really do appreciate it. Why not visit the Mastermind Facebook group? And also, to keep up with the latest news, click wp-tonic.com/newsletter. We'll see you next time.